Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, January 31st, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the NPR newsroom. On today's edition, Governor Walz says he'll boost funding for local governments, and a House committee advances a bill to fight opioid abuse. Governor Tim Walz has provided the first details about what will be in his two-year budget package that he'll release next month. The DFLer told a group of Greater Minnesota mayors yesterday to expect a hefty increase in aid from the state. As Brian Baxter reports, Walz says there's more than that in store for communities beyond the metropolitan area.
Just before Walz arrived at a Capital Area hotel to speak to a few dozen local officials, the coalition of Greater Minnesota cities' priorities were projected on a screen. Atop the list was a $30 million annual boost to the program that sends state tax dollars back to cities to help them defray the cost of services. That amount would return the total pot of aid back to where it was in 2002, when adjusting for inflation. As if on cue, the governor had this to say in his brief remarks.
Our intention in a budget is to restore local government aid to the 2002 levels. That was the pledge that was made.
But then the first Greater Minnesota governor in almost 30 years made an appeal to his audience.
I am preaching to the choir, but what I'm asking is for the choir to sing loudly for the next 3 months, to be there, to talk to people, to build the coalitions.
Walz is bracing for battles over a gas tax he thinks should go up to fund future road work. And he's expecting stiff pushback over an extension of a tax on medical procedures that would otherwise end later this year. That one helps pay for health care programs. He hinted that there could be an income tax cut as part of his plan, noting that it's been almost two decades since that happened. Walz says his forthcoming budget plan will contain other things rural residents will appreciate.
Moonshot type on of an approach towards broadband in Greater Minnesota. We don't have time to wait till 2025.
Walz says more reliable internet is essential for businesses and school children alike. It's all part of his three-pillar view that his budget must enhance education, healthcare, and community prosperity. Moorhead's new mayor, Jonathan Judd, was among the city leaders in the room. He was pleased to hear Walz commit to a higher amount for local government aid.
To show that he's vested, or has a vested interest personally, and that that's going to be a priority for Greater Minnesota, it's a big deal. So very happy about that.
Judd says it's important to keep sight of what the money goes for.
It subsidizes our local efforts with our fire, police. It's a really big deal to make sure that our community has that aid coming in and make sure that we can keep those services supported, and it keeps our property taxes low.
The Walz budget will be based on an assumption that the state has $1.5 billion more than it was anticipating to pay for programs. But another economic forecast will be out at the end of February, and there are signs that the projected surplus could shrink. Marty Seifert lobbies for the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. He's also a former Republican lawmaker from Marshall. He says the Walz local aid package could be a point of compromise because the center of gravity for the Republican Senate majority is rooted in Greater Minnesota.
It's a lift, but $30 million is a rounding error in the whole budget, and I really think that if they put it as a high priority, it'll get done. Maybe at the end of the day, they trim it back a little bit.
He says the biggest hurdle usually is getting the money into the governor's budget proposal. Walz says he plans to preview other aspects of his budget in the weeks ahead, rather than wait until a grand reveal on the February 19th deadline. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt at the Capitol.
A Minnesota House panel has advanced a wide-ranging bill aimed at fighting opioid abuse. Members of the House Health and Human Services Policy Committee approved the measure last night by a vote of 10-3 after a lengthy hearing. Under the bill, the state would collect up to $20 million a year from drug manufacturers and wholesalers to fund prevention and treatment efforts. Speaking in support of the bill, Dr. Chris Johnson of Allina Health apologized to lawmakers and to families affected by the opioid crisis.
My profession failed you. Make no mistake, we are here listening to this testimony because the medical industry failed you. This crisis was not an accident. This was engineered.
The bill's chief sponsor, DFL Representative Liz Olson of Duluth, said there's an urgent need for action to help prevent additional opioid-related deaths. She said the crisis is also taking a financial toll on state and local government. Judy Cook, a lobbyist representing a generic drug manufacturers association, questioned the fairness of the bill.
Generic manufacturers did not create opioids, did not market them, did not pay physicians, are highly regulated, and only manufacture what the DEA allows. As you may know, a similar funding mechanism was found unconstitutional in New York.
Republican Representative Dave Baker of Willmar said there are many good things in the bill, but he said there's still room for improvement. The bill goes next to the Commerce Committee. A bill to make Minnesota one of the few states to guarantee paid time off for extended parental leave or family care is out of the gates at the Capitol. But the initial hearing and party line vote on the proposal illustrates how difficult it will be to pass in a divided legislature. Brian Baxt is back with that one.
To Maisel McCoy Anderson, juggling a severe family health ailment and her nursing job proved too difficult.
I had to quit my job when my parents needed me. Their health started to fail.
They lived in North Carolina. She was holding down a household here.
I ended up worried, depressed, mentally sick, and then doing a whole lot of stressing.
McCoy Anderson told her story to the House Labor Committee, which began examining the Democratic proposal to provide caregivers like her at least partial wage replacement for up to 12 weeks. The same benefit would be extended to parents upon the birth or adoption of a child. To pay for it, employers would face assessments toward a new state fund that is similar to unemployment insurance, and they would be barred from firing or demoting an employee who applies for leave. All of it has major players in the business community on edge, including among companies that voluntarily offer such leave already.
There's only a handful of other states that have ever done this, and most of those states already had existing infrastructure in place that they just built upon. Minnesota would have to build this from scratch.
Jill Larson of the Minnesota Business Partnership echoed other business lobbyists in saying the proposal would add to the cost of operating businesses and step on companies' own efforts to craft leave plans for their employees. There are also concerns about the state's ability to handle such a program after high-profile failures with other government technology rollouts. Owners of some smaller businesses urged lawmakers to forge ahead.
My name is Anna Santier, owner of Two Bodies Green Cleaning in Minneapolis.
The company employs 160 full and part-time cleaners. She says she'd gladly contribute to a fund if it means her staff gets access to an insurance pool for family leave.
I can recruit and retain employees just like the big dogs when I can offer similar benefits that they do. As a small business owner, I know my business will thrive and grow when we can take care of our staff.
There's much left to be sorted out. Timing is one. It could take a few years to get it up and running. Skeptics say even that's too fast. Associations for Minnesota cities and school boards have reservations too, given that it's the type of benefit that would normally be bargained for. The bill moved forward on a 10-5 vote, but only after Republicans on the committee lobbed many questions at supporters. GOP Representative Dan Fabian of Roseau said it's already tough for Main Street businesses or service providers to backfill during absences.
Nurses and doctors and so forth, if someone leaves, how do you schedule? How do you retain? How do you replace those people when they're gone in these types of jobs that are so critical to our small towns? We're talking about caring for people. This is probably some of the ultimate care that we have.
DFL Representative Lori Halverson of Eagan promised to keep working with supporters and opponents of her bill to address concerns.
Getting this program passed is complicated, but lives are complicated as well. And I think that it's up to us as policymakers to recognize the ways that Minnesotans are trying to live their lives, go to work, and take care of their families, and to support them in doing so.
The bill faces a steeper climb in the Republican-controlled Senate. But DFL Governor Tim Walz says he sees a paid leave proposal as a priority for the session, and his administration is committed to making it happen. So expect it to be in play until the legislature's May conclusion. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt at the Capitol.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.